Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey everybody, it's Angela. In today's episode, I am talking with John and Jim about messaging. As you guys know, oftentimes our clients don't have the depth of language or emotional awareness to really convey how a case impacts them. So that becomes part of the role of the children's lawyer. When you do that effectively, it enables you to win the hearts and minds of judges and other decision makers and sometimes even parents. So Jim is going to kick us off with one way to access a different perspective on behalf of your client, and that's imagining your client when they're fully grown.
So this is a unique perspective that a children's lawyer can have that we want to talk about and kind of build on today. The trick is really to imagine that your client is now 30 years old sitting across from your desk and asking you, for example, why didn't I go home? You don't want the answer to be, well, there was a wait list because of a lack of providers, or, you know, all we had was intern level therapists available and your mom had deeper end issues. That can't be the answer. And look, we work in a field where we are regularly out of the stuff we need to have to do our jobs well. I mean, you know, if this was a coffee place and you went into it and they ran out of cups every day at 10:30, you'd stop going there. Unfortunately, in our field, we run out of therapists. We run out of people to supervise visits. We run out of transportation. We run out of all the basic needs that we need to do this job well every day in this country. But that's just where we find ourselves. But as children's lawyers, we want to avoid those stupid things being the reasons why our client's life goes completely off path. And so this is a way of zooming out and having a broad perspective of your client's life and how you can change that trajectory by making sure that a lot of the little things aren't the reasons that things go wrong. And it helps you with messaging as well. So it's helpful in a whole lot of areas of your practice. You don't want to have a hard time explaining your choices to your client. You want to fight hard enough for the parent. You want to fight hard enough for whatever it is they needed to find permanency at the time.
And once you slide in to this mindset, once you do this mental exercise, there's a couple different aspects of this, and it can be applied in a couple different ways, right? So we're talking about advocating for a client after doing this exercise and how it can give you different ways to message things to different audiences. This is not about how to make a cogent legal argument, okay? This is not about how to argue your client's right to permanency. This is about, well, we're trying to reunify a family, right? We're trying to put people back together, a relationship back together that the state or the parents or someone has broken apart, right? As a system, we're trying to change human behavior, which is a really difficult thing to do. And you can sometimes spout the law and the facts at the human beings who are involved in these cases until the tide goes out, and you're still not going to make an impact, because this is, on some level, it's a battle for the hearts and minds of your client's parents, because you're trying to change their behavior. So sometimes in messaging, it's helpful to think, what would my 30-year-old client say to them? If my 30-year-old client were sitting across the desk from me when they're 30, would they say, well, did you tell them how important this was to me? Did you tell them what they meant to me? Did you tell them, you know, what's at stake here? That I didn't want to spend another birthday away from them. You know, that I wanted to be with them on Mother's Day, not with my aunt or my foster mother. We don't say those things. We avoid some of those difficult, more emotional arguments in court. And we have to sometimes, right? We're not there to trigger people. We're not there to upset people. But at the same time, most people who have been doing this work for a while know that when you get to the end of a case, sometimes parents walk out of the courtroom and they've lost their kids and they really have no clue what just happened or why it happened or how it happened. So you can use this in court to message things, or in mediations, or in staffings, to message the importance of the relationship to your client's parents in a way that really is, in a way, it's your duty, right? Because your client can't do it, almost regardless of their age, okay? Like a 16-year-old, unless they're a very sophisticated, emotionally mature 16-year-old, even they cannot articulate sometimes what the relationship means to them. Sometimes there's just too much baggage. So it does become our role sometimes, and it's also a very useful advocacy tool to help you achieve whatever outcome you're trying to achieve sometimes.
You know, it's great to have this perspective when messaging to the courts, messaging to other attorneys, messaging to the parents. And we hit this hard in visitation. When visitation's an issue, from the child's perspective, visitation can be their entire world. And everyone else is just looking at this sporadic visitation that's taking place. And to our client, it's literally their whole life that they see flashing before them. So we hit this hard on visitation because that's a very emotional issue for our clients, and the rest of us can sit there and watch it be sporadic or not enforced. And to our clients, it can be, you know, their sun sets and rises upon the visitation with the parents. So messaging from your client's perspective can be a real driver. And, you know, you can sometimes you use it when you're negotiating for surrenders of parental rights as well. When a parent can understand that a client just can't take anymore if they've been in the system for 2 years. Sometimes that's a way to negotiate a case to settlement. So it's an important tool. It's a really helpful tool. And it starts with that perspective of what would my client say if they could really truly articulate as an adult what they're going through and what is important to them.
Yeah, and I've used it this way. I've used it on the parent who has done all of their tasks but just can't seem to get employment or housing. You know, they just can't. There's something there that's just, there's just, I don't want to say a lack of motivation. It could be a lack of capacity, or I'm not sure what the problem is. I'm thinking of a specific case of mine, but as the state agency kept talking about changing the goal to adoption, that it's been long enough, we can't wait any longer. I would constantly hit on, when the judge would turn to me, what's your position? I'd say, you know, I have three young clients who absolutely love their mother. They absolutely love her. And I was trying to motivate her to do it for her kids, to take the extra, to push through whatever it was that was blocking her from getting the job and holding it and getting a place to live and keeping it. And, you know, there was a time in the case where, you know, there was very little else for me to argue, because I'm not going to, what good is holding her in contempt going to do, right? She's going to set us back further. It was a way of making sure, though, that even if things went south and they ended up getting adopted, never seeing her again, if they came to me when they were 30, I can say with a clear conscience, I laid it all out there, how important this was to you. I let, unequivocally, she knew your emotions and your feelings, even though you were too young to articulate them. I did it for you. And so, you know, even if it doesn't affect the outcome, I think there's value to it for that adult client to know that somebody expressed those emotions for them while there was still time. Now, the other part of this is, it also works with older kids, right? Older kids, like I said earlier, they have trouble articulating this stuff too. So I'm representing a kid charged with domestic violence against his mother, and he's sitting out there, and I went out to talk to him for the first time and meet him. And I just tried to chat him up, try to get him open up a little bit. And I just had this feeling. And I said, so as we chatted a little bit and he gave me one word answers, I said, so did you ever have any child welfare involvement? He said, yeah, when I was little, I was in foster care. And I thought, oh, okay. So we go into court. And of course, in delinquency court, right, for these kids who are often charged with assault on their parents, sometimes there's a reason for their behavior. So I requested all of his DCF records, but I already knew what I was going to find. And sure enough, he'd been in foster care. Why was he in foster care? Physical abuse by his mother and witnessing terrible domestic violence when he was 7 to 9 years old. So here he is just being made out to be the villain in his delinquency case now. And nobody in the courtroom understands his version of events. So I'm thinking to myself, it's 15. He's intelligent. Anyone would say he can competently inform his representation, and he could. But emotionally competent to really understand what the argument is that, hey, I'm doing this because you programmed me to do this when I was 7 to 9 years old. I saw that that when you get angry, you get physical. That's what I was taught. And now I'm just doing what I was taught. Now, that doesn't excuse his present behavior, but it certainly changes the narrative in the courtroom. And I was able to do that on his behalf. And I think it softened the plea because I was able to win the court and the state, the prosecutor. And I was not his defense attorney, by the way. I was his attorney ad litem in a pending dependency case. But I was able to change the narrative on his behalf by telling the story as if he were a fully formed 30-year-old adult who understood all of the consequences, all of the ramifications of what his childhood had been. And when I made that statement, those statements privately in front of his mother to him and to the prosecutor and to his defense attorney outside of court, his eyes lit up and he looked at me and he looked at his mother with this look of, are you listening? Do you hear what this guy is saying? So that's another way this can be implemented into your practice.
Yeah, because these clients at a young age, imagine, a recording device and you just press the record button and the information just gets dumped in. That's what they're like as children. Our clients are just taking stuff in. There is no filter, especially at very young ages. There is absolutely no way to filter the information, to judge the information. You are simply seeing the world the way it is, according to your environment, and you accept it fully and wholeheartedly as the truth, as reality. So the stuff these kids see at a young age is going in there and it's staying in there. And so that's a good example, really, I think you're given of, advocating and messaging from the child's perspective. And what we mean by that, to reiterate it, is the perspective of having a full understanding of that life trajectory and who they are, how they got there, where they're going, the whole picture. So it's really about zooming out and then messaging from there as to what's important to them and what they need right now.
One of our roles is to, and I think what distinguishes us is that it is our role to step into the shoes of our client and advocate for them as if they were a fully informed adult. After we conduct our own investigation and we understand their history and we understand their family dynamics and their culture and their relationships, we do our best to determine what would this person, this human being, want me to advocate for if they were able to sit across from my desk and say, please, please make sure that this gets said on my behalf.
You know, one of the things that, Jim, I think you talked about earlier was the visitation piece. And, I'm hearing everything that we're talking about, and it's kind of a way of like pulling out all the stops. In other words, we're not trying to guilt a parent per se, but we're trying to say the things our client can't say for themselves. And I wonder, Jim, if you might be able to give us some examples of the types, like how you might go about that in a visit. Let's say a parent isn't visiting regularly. We know visitation is a predictor for successful reunification. We know the client is, really disappointed. Like how might you message that specifically to the court for the parent's benefit?
Well, I've had cases, I can think of one, where I've had to sit with the parents and their counsel and say, basically, my clients are emotionally exhausted right now. It had been 18 months or so, and it was a second removal. And these folks were just marginal. And as we all know, the marginal cases are the ones that stay in our system the longest. Not the easy ones, not the horrendous ones. It's the marginal ones that we work the hardest. And these folks were that case. And I had to really express to them that my young clients, this is something they'd never be able to say, right? They were like 6 and 7 years old. I told them, they're emotionally exhausted. They're worn out. They want so much to believe in you, but their belief is slipping because they're starting to see that you don't show up when you say you're going to, that they're still here, that you've told them they're going home and they don't. They had weekend visits with you and then you lost them. So all these things, I try and like take the elements of the case, like the lost weekend visits, like the failed drug screens, things like that. And I try to put it into the parent's view from the child's perspective. Like, this is just so crushing to my clients that this is happening. And they feel it in the lack of visitation. They feel with the inconsistency. They feel it in the fact that they are still in a foster home after 18 months. Even though that parent that they just innately love so much is just there out of reach, visiting 2 times a week, 3 times a week. And so it was effective in that case, in that the parents were young and they were able to grow up a little and turn it around. But you can use it in court, like we were saying. You can use it in staffings. And it's just a way of bringing everyone's attention to what's really important. And it kind of cuts deeper because it's almost an emotional type of resonance with this type of messaging that you can't get through with logic arguments like you were ordered to do this or the child has a right to permanency or this is your third attempt at drug treatment. That stuff just, at some point, you know it. You know when you're on a case where that is just empty words and you're going to have to reach deeper and try and share this the child's perspective with the parties.
So to bring it back around to the beginning and where we started out this episode, when you're struggling to get your cases moving, or maybe you're struggling to get yourself to fight just a little bit harder or to say some of the really hard things, go back to that scenario of sitting at your desk with your 30-year-old client sitting across from you. What would they tell you? What would they want you to say? What would they want you to do? And what would they want their parents to know? And make sure as their lawyer that you're making all of that happen.
You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.